Thank you, kids. Welcome to the Phenology Show. Our next report comes from Chad Caddett's class at Little Falls Middle School, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But first, I need to tell you that you are listening to KAXE 91.7 FM Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley and Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. And now, our report from Chad Caddett's class at Little Falls.
This is Mattia
and Kylie reporting from Little Falls Middle School. This is our phenology report for the week of November 9th.
We had red admiral butterfly sightings on November 4th. We are doubtful it will make it south.
Most fields have a red-tailed hawk perched on a fence or hay bale, searching for rodents.
This week, we had multiple sightings of puffballs, inky caps, turkey tails, and Artis fungi.
For some reason, there is a noticeable increase in the amount of red-breasted nuthatches we are seeing.
We had another sighting of a green and turquoise elf cup, which are the bodies of blue-green stained fungus.
The dropping of most leaves from trees has revealed the large amount of buckthorn we have growing around here, as their leaves are still green.
Small groups of geese and swans are typically flying around dawn and dusk.
We still have some blue violets blooming, and we believe we have seen the last of our butter and eggs for the year.
We have seen gray squirrels taking the fallen walnuts from the trees at our school.
The crabapple tree outside our window at school is loaded with bright yellow fruit, and just as many can be found on the ground beneath it.
There was a sighting of another black bear on the 2nd, but we are guessing the cold weather this week might make this our last one for the season.
That is our report for this week. Until next week,
keep exploring, keep discovering, keep connecting with the great outdoors.
Thank you, Mattia and Kylie. What a nice report. As always, Chad does a wonderful job with the students down there. A red admiral butterfly. The red admiral can be migratory, and these, like they said, we doubt that it will make it south. You never know. Sometimes you wait just a little too long and things don't work out, but maybe you get a break. It was awfully cold, though the Red Admiral would have had a strong northwest wind pushing it south if it wanted to go last week. Red-tailed hawks and Let's see. Red-tailed hawks. Yeah, and then a bunch of puffballs, inky caps, turkey tails, and artist fungi. Most noticeable increase, red-breasted nuthatches. The green and turquoise elf cup, which are the bodies of the blue-green stain fungus. Lots of great newts. Buckthorn, of course. This is the time of year. As I look out the window here at KAXE Studios, I can see the bright green leaves of the buckthorn along the Mississippi River here. And we wish it were not here, but there it is, and we'll just have to work on getting rid of it if we can. A black bear on November 2nd, so still a lot of bear sightings out this time of year. It's pretty amazing. Our next report comes from Justin Steffen's class at Linwood Elementary School.
Greetings from the 4th grade phenology team in the Linwood School Forest. This is Lily,
Elizabeth, and Emmy
reporting on our observations from the week ending November 7th.
This week we observed a small muskrat got stuck on our playground during recess. It ran off when we lined up to go inside.
We also observed that our red and silver maple buds look much different from each other. The red maple has red buds in a cluster, and the silver maple has smaller, pointier buds.
We also saw our lilac tree has a bird's nest in it, but the birds used part of a plastic bag as nesting materials. A good reminder to not litter.
In the forest, we saw that our cottonwood tree lost all of its leaves, and now we can see it has big green pointy buds that are shaped like teardrops.
That is all from the Linwood School Forest. And remember,
there's no place like Linwood.
Thanks, kids. There is no place like Linwood, and that's true for wherever you are. Just add your town's name. Lily, Elizabeth, and Emmy, great report. Muskrats stuck in their playground. I don't know. Muskrats typically this time of year have found a place to stay and are busy storing up food for some winter, making a little hut to come out of the water and get dry and warm a little bit. But this guy, who knows, maybe he got run off from where he was and tried out a new spot. Red and silver maple, they talked about the difference in the buds. Always good to get out and look carefully at any tree in your neighborhood. Their lilac had a bird nest in it, plastic bag material. Good reminder, do not litter. That's always good advice. And I don't know, the great crested flycatcher has a history of putting snake skins in its nests. And it's possible that this could have been a nest of the great crested flycatcher, though I haven't seen it. But the plastic bag may have been, you know, something that it picked up thinking, oh, this looks like a snake skin. This will help. Cottonwood trees lost their leaves. You can see the big pointy buds. That's pretty cool. And we'll have to keep an eye on that and check out those buds in the spring when they begin to turn into leaves again. Our next report comes from Michelle Martin's class at Prairie Creek Community School in Northfield.
Hi, this is Emery.
And this is Esri.
And we're from Prairie Creek Community School, way down south in Northfield, Minnesota.
It snowed. We got a dusting of snow on November 9th.
It was also the first really hard freeze, and many of the softer leaves like locust and maple came down all at once.
It's also been getting a lot darker in the afternoon.
Hank's mom saw the last dragonfly. It had to be the last, right?
Hank's mom also got hit by a bunny that came bounding out of the brush.
Most of us have noticed that there are mice in our house.
We've also seen a lot of bald eagles, including a few on nests and in pairs.
Grace noticed how much easier it is to see nests right now.
Oscar shared that his chickens started to lay eggs.
Oscar also saw some sandhill cranes.
And Natalie saw a possum.
We haven't seen any herons or vultures this week.
This has been Prairie Creek.
One more step along the phrenology journey.
Thank you, Emery and Esri. Nice report. It snowed on November 9th, the dusting, finally a really hard freeze. Many of the softer leaves, like the locusts and the maples, came down all at once. Locusts and maples still having leaves on them tells you that they are quite a bit south of us. Hank's mom saw a last dragonfly. Maybe, we'll see. It's the time of year when typically I expect to see the last ones. Hank's mom also got hit by a bunny. That was a wild rabbit. Don't know what was going on there. Emery reported that Grace has said that it's now much easier to see bird nests. And this is the time of year when, yeah, I run across bird nests that are like right in my path. And I think, why haven't I noticed it until now? Sandhill cranes still moving out of the area. Herons and vultures are gone. That kind of reinforces what's happening up here. Our last report this week comes from Dan Winkler's class at Caledonia High School in Houston County. This is a new school for us, and I'm excited to hear what they have to say.
Hi, this is Walker Bennett Will reporting from Caledonia High School, location Houston County, Minnesota. We experienced the end of the daylight savings in shorter days. Saw the beaver supermoon November 5th and some frost.
Oak trees have turned red and maroon. Other deciduous trees have dropped their leaves. Still some dandelions in bloom.
The deer rut has started. Snow buntings have arrived. Owls are beginning to be territorial. Ducks are congregating on the Mississippi. Mice are trying to find warmth, so they are more active. This has been Walker, Bennett, and Will reporting from Caledonia High School. Never stop questioning.
Hey, thank you, Walker, Bennett, Will. Nice report. Good things in there. Beaver supermoon, some frost. Oaks have turned red and maroon. Other deciduous trees are dropping their leaves. There's still dandelions in bloom down in Caledonia. And the deer rut has begun. Snow buntings have arrived even that far south. Owls are definitely talking. Ducks on the Mississippi. And another note about mice being active. And I'm running a pretty steady trap line at my house as well. So they are active mice wherever you go, I guess. This is the time of year when they're looking for a nice warm place to spend the winter. A little bit of peanut butter in a mouse trap, and they'll have a nice warm place to spend the winter in my compost pile.
My new favorite exit line, never stop questioning.
Yeah.
From our new school. Yeah,
that's a great one. Thank you. Looking forward to more. Nice to have a way south. I always thought Northfield was south, but Caledonia is way down south. Thank you. Thanks all of you for your great reports. This student phenology, it's just amazing. It's just an opportunity to get a feel for phenology across the entire state. So it's really, really exciting. Thanks so much for being a part of it.
Coming up will be Tornado Bob and the big weather picture. But first, we'd like to thank Minsure, offering Minnesotans the opportunity to find discounts, compare private health plans, and see if they qualify for no-cost or low-cost insurance. Expert advice is also available. Enrollment deadline is December 18th for coverage starting January 1st. Information and enrollment online, mnsure.org.
We receive support from Oak Hill Assisted Living in Grand Rapids, providing personalized care in a home setting. More information at oakhillseniors.com.
We also heard back from Deb from Bruno. She texted in, said, I had a small flock of evening grosbeaks a few days ago. My bird cam wasn't charged up, though.
Well, they're coming, and it's one of those things. It used to be back in the 80s and early 90s that they would come, and everybody would have a flock of 25 to 50 hanging out at their feeders and just pigging themselves out for the entire winter. Such is not the case, but this many reports this early in the season, who knows? Maybe we'll have a return to a few more evening grosbeaks in the area. They are lovely, lovely birds. The males are black and white and yellow and quite startlingly colored. So keep an eye out. If you see them, by all means, let us know. We receive support from North Homes Children and Family Services, providing mental health care in Minnesota. November is National Adoptive Awareness Month, highlighting the need for adoptive and foster care families. North Homes provides licensing and case management for those opening their heart and home. More information is available at northhomes.org.
Time to talk weather. Tornado Bob joins us in the studio. Bob Kinzemius in the big weather picture. Morning, Bob. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Heidi.
Hey, Bob.
Hi, John.
How are you doing?
I'm operating with the normal parameters.
Ah, excellent. No overheating.
Nope.
No problem with the coolant being too low. All good.
Right.
Excellent.
Yeah, oil levels are okay.
Yeah.
Are good.
You want to make sure you've got antifreeze for your systems, because the temperatures are starting to approach normal, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of getting down there a little bit. I was actually moderately surprised how quickly a lot of the small ponds and stuff froze up.
Yeah.
We did get, I guess we have a few, at least a couple days where it stayed below freezing.
Yes.
Yep. Day and night. I didn't catch all of the low temperatures, but there were some numerous places getting down to like 20, 18, and I saw some 16 or so, something like that, like around the region.
Yeah, I had 18 for a low.
Okay.
17.9 or something. I always just round it. So it was 18 for a low on, I think it was Sunday night or Saturday night. I'd have to look.
Yeah.
That was my first sub 20 temperature for the year.
All right.
Along with the snow that fell was the first accumulation of snow, the first snow on the ground.
Okay. Well, it wouldn't have surprised me had we gotten through November without that, but right. we did have it. So, we got like half an inch, something like that.
Yep. I had close to half an inch by the time I got it all measured and I had to pile it all up to get a half inch.
Well, winter's over. Spring's here now. So
yeah.
I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah. I didn't get a chance to ski, but, I did test the ice.
Good.
Congratulations. The dog walked right out on it. She had no problem. I stepped off of the end of the little wooden platform that I have going out to the edge and went right through. And so I looked at the half inch of ice that I'd broken up and
walks on a half inch of ice. Well, it's got four legs and
but
it's got half the weight, less than half the weight that you have.
But if you spread it out, I mean, I've got much bigger feet than my dog. I don't know.
It's how it's spread out.
Like, apparently,
you're still like concentrated in a smaller area than the dog's weight is. The paws are smaller, but you gotta,
you've spread it out over 2.5 feet.
Yeah, rather than 1 foot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did it totally freeze over?
No, just open. It just frozen on the edges, but there were. Lily Lake, the airport's seaplane base, was frozen over.
Okay.
And I saw a pond down where County Road 17 comes into 169. That had a full blanket of ice.
That one. Okay. Yep. Yeah.
Hmm. Other than that, I didn't see others, but I'm sure there were some that froze.
Yeah. Well, interesting. So I got to get things started, but the weather coming up is not going to be particularly cold. In fact, I cannot find a similarly cold spell in the forecast through the next 2.5 weeks.
Wow.
So it's not going to be very cold. We'll be getting down into the 20s at night some of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But we're definitely going to be above freezing pretty much every day for the foreseeable future.
Anything, are we going to touch 50?
There's a good chance we will, especially south of Highway 2. It'll be back up into the 50s sometime, which isn't unusual for, we're still it's mid-November now, in the middle of November. It's not unusual for 50s to happen. The latest we can get it, I've seen 70s, almost into the middle of November. So
wow.
Pretty much the middle, but that's more in southern Minnesota than here. But
right, right.
Still,
statewide, we could have some temperatures above 60s.
Yeah, wow. Especially in the southern Minnesota with a pattern coming up.
Interesting.
So it's still possible. Right now, the other thing is the pattern is markedly dry. We don't have big weather systems coming, big precipitation laden systems coming through. I had 0.2 inches last week.
Yeah. 0.2.
0.2.
Wow.
Yep.
And I got 0.02.
Huh. How did I get that much then?
I don't know.
But anyway, or no, it was maybe the weekend before last. I saw it was the weekend, the first weekend in, I've had 0.2 inches in my gauge far this month.
Okay.
So, November is the most, I call it the most rapidly decreasing precipitation month relative to the previous month. We're like in October, we're getting like 2.8 or something like that. In November, we're getting, that maybe cuts close to in half. And we will not, it is highly unlikely we will get the normal precipitation amount in November. Just the theme of our weather pattern this fall and for the past couple of years, it seems, is generally dry, and that will continue. We're categorized as moderate drought across the pretty much all the Mississippi headwaters region, and then abnormally dry up to the Canadian border. Abnormally dry goes down to the Mississippi River around St. Cloud and just north of the cities, And the area just south of us, there is severe drought. And that's kind of like a, from Duluth towards just kind of the area around Duluth and just south and southwest of Duluth. So I'm generally expecting dry conditions, not a whole lot of precipitation this winter. Even though the official forecast says calls for, you know, generally colder than average conditions, you know, relative to our kind of recent winters. And then it's also calling for above chances of, you know, slightly better than average chances of above normal precipitation.
Yeah.
Generally, the official forecasts are calling for that. But given where we, I mean, the weather pattern is going to have to change in order to get that. Just what I see coming into winter now is not looking like one that's going to produce just the way the weather systems are moving across the country. There's not a and when we get a lot of snow, you see cold air building up in southern, you know, cold air accumulating in southern Canada. It sets the stage for any low pressure system to come through and intensify. We just don't have that pattern in place. It's sort of like there's no big temperature contrast. It's a lot, you know, temperature, no big east-west gradient of temperature, or the gradient, like say having, there's no case where you have like cold air just north of the border in Canada and cold warm air to the south and good access to Gulf moisture and all that stuff coming together. It's all like, you get one thing. If you get the cold air, it's just driving straight south, and there's no front, like a temperature gradient associated with it upon which a low pressure system can act and cause precipitation.
Oh, okay.
It's like I'm looking at the dynamics and not wanting to, you know, I wanted to describe in them in like 10 seconds. and I'm not seeing those things in the atmosphere or over Minnesota this year.
Yeah.
So far.
I've got 15 hundredths of an inch of rain so far in November. And I started in March keeping track on this Cocoras. And I have had 18.91. So I don't have January, February, and part of March moisture to bring that number up. But not a lot of moisture right now.
Right.
I've got a question about today. At 5 o'clock this morning, the sky was clear as a bell. I was out looking at the stars and the moon. Everything was just sharp. And just about sunrise, I caught a little glimpse of sun on the trees across the road on the hill by your house. And now it's cloudy. Where did all that, what happened? Where did that come from?
After that, look at the satellite.
Were there clouds somewhere nearby, or did the clouds develop?
They were probably nearby. And we had, let's see where this is. Yeah, they just came in from the north a little bit. So we had a weather system that moved across. We had drizzle, freezing drizzle yesterday morning, just a tiny little bit of it.
Mm.
And so the weather system came through, you know, pretty much dry for the most part. Otherwise, other than that freezing drizzle, and usually you get low clouds. But in if the systems pass to the north like they're doing this week, after that first round of high and middle level clouds, and it clears out, what you often see is as the wind switch to the north, we get some low clouds behind on the tail end of the system.
Okay.
And that'll be kind of what we see throughout much between now through December, is you'll get that pattern. You'll look, and it seems to like when you're like looking for auroras all the time, like I am, you'll see this pattern. Like you'll look at the, you know, near sunset, maybe it cleared up during the day a little bit, and you'll sunset, you'll see high level clouds from the next weather system, you know, off to the west. And you know, by the time it gets dark, those high level, mid and high level clouds will be over us. And then they kind of move through overnight, and then in the morning, you know, the wind is switched to the north. You've got some low clouds coming through on northerly winds. And then maybe at midday it clears off again. And then for a little bit, for an hour or something like that. And then you know, that next sunset, later in the day, you see the next band of high clouds coming in. So it's you don't get that much sunlight at this time of year. And you get, you know, generally less rain. So more clouds, but less rain.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of what we see in less rain, and we got a little snow, but
yeah.
November, the long-term average for November for snowfall is about 8 inches, something on the order of that. And I'd be really surprised to get that much.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we hopefully we'll end up with as much as an inch, but I'm not expecting much more than that, like inch or two or something like that for this month. And that'll most likely be it. But there is always that chance the meteorologist is wrong.
Yeah, I was going to ask if our meteorologist, Bob, who loves to cross-country ski, you want to put a wager on the table when your first ski will be?
Oh, sometime around Christmas.
Okay.
Yeah, just because that's when we are done making snow at Mount Itasca, and then you can...
Okay.
Usually just before Christmas,
All right.
We're done. And then that's when I can think about like actually doing something in the snow rather than making it.
Yeah. Okay. But not just man-made snow, not.
Oh yeah. You'll probably need, I think you'll need the man-made snow up until like just after Christmas.
Okay.
Or maybe, I don't know. I just, my feeling is my gut feel. Okay, so now I'll give you the average. Okay. Like normally we need about 5 or 6 inches of snow to groom out for natural like cross country ski trails, and that's and that happens sometime around December 20th on average. So okay. Yeah, it doesn't happen much before Christmas.
Okay,
so that's generally what you can expect. If we get lucky, maybe we get heavier snow in December. Then you get it earlier than that. But, most often, it's sometime around or the average date of like 5 or 6 inches of snow on the ground. I'd say with the first date in the winter where the average snow depth is 5 or 6 inches is sometime like just before Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. And in some years, not even then.
Right. Yeah.
But where, you know, if you can give me ice before you give me snow, I'll be happy.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like you're going to give me ice in the next 10 to 15 days.
You know, maybe, I'll keep my fingers crossed for you because I know this is very special.
I have my skates ready to go.
Right.
My skates are sharp. My life jacket is ready.
the big trick is freezing the lakes without getting lake effect snow in the process. Yeah. There are enough enough lakes around that they give off moisture, and we get this, you know, persistent snow shower activity as things are freezing up, and so we get these dustings of snow, and it's maybe enough to mess up the skating on the lakes. So it's tricky you have to have not just cold air around, you have to have those calm mornings that are absolutely clear to freeze things, and then not have as much cold air around. It's just a very tricky process, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
Well, and you're right. It's not that a half inch ruins the skating. What it does is it
hides the cracks.
It hides the cracks.
Oh, yes.
And when I was a kid, you know, I didn't worry about it. I just went skating, and if I hit a crack, I just fell down, and I got up and skated some more. Nowadays, if I fall down, I may not get right back up. I may lay on the ice and let the ice effect kind of ease the pain.
Sure. Anyhow, so I wanted to close before we go on solar weather.
Oh,
solar, okay. Well, space weather.
We did have an amazing display. I saw some kids showed me some pictures that they took last Wednesday of the aurora.
Yeah, that evening.
It was pretty spectacular for a lot of young kids because it happened early.
Yeah.
Which is how it should be, but I didn't get notice until about 10:30 at night, and by then I was, you know, an hour into sleep.
Okay.
Yeah.
but anyway, so the sun has been pretty active this week. Just this morning we had another X-class flare, and that has, we can see a big coronal mass ejection associated with that. So we've got a couple of these big flare associated coronal mass ejections coming at Earth. The first is supposed to arrive this evening. The weather forecast is for cloudy, mostly cloudy, but clearing late. So by morning, it'll be clearing off. Tomorrow, it'll be mostly sunny. And then tomorrow night, it should be clear as well. So, we should have a good chance if the conditions with the magnetic field orientation within these clouds of plasma that are headed towards us, if the magnetic field orientation is favorable with a magnetic field that opposes Earth's magnetic field, then we'd see more northern lights, and it could be, you know, one of those relatively spectacular displays because we have multiple coronal mass ejections on the way.
All right.
So that was like kind of the same conditions that gave us our May 10th and 11th storm last year.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very remarkable one because that was looking south.
Oh, yes, yeah. I recall now. Yeah, it was full sky.
Full sky, yeah. And for a while, the northern sky was dark, and then the southern sky was, those were where the lights were.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like, if it gets strong enough and the magnetic field in the solar wind is far enough south, then it'll push the auroras farther south, too.
Yeah.
So they come closer to us, but if they, you know, this case, they went past us a little bit, and they were down in southern Minnesota and Iowa.
Yeah.
So you look south to see the northern lights.
Yeah.
Anyway, so active conditions are here. And the moon phase is, you know, like last week's auroras, those ones on Wednesday night, were on it was a full moon, the brightest full moon of the year. So, that was spectacular. They got really bright for a while. And then this past weekend, we had a gathering of aurora freaks like myself. It was called the Aurora Summit, and it was out at Red Cliff on the Bayfield Peninsula.
Oh, okay.
At the legendary Waters Resort and Casino. So we had a weekend of aurora, just talking about them and photography and the science and everything like that. That was fun.
Nice. Maybe we could persuade you to offer a class on photography for aurora. That would be an interesting bit of study for a guy like me.
Sure.
I'd like to know how to do it better.
Yeah.
Bob, thanks. As always, it's a pleasure to have you in and to get a chance to chat about the weather and about the aurora. And I look forward to next week.
Yes, likewise.
All right.
Okay.
Coming up, we'll have local news with the Up North Report. We're also going to be talking with Pam Perry. We're talking birds and frogs today. Make sure you stay tuned at 9 o'clock. We've got some Veterans Day specials for you.
We receive support from Klockow Brewing Company in Grand Rapids, making traditional old world styles of beer as well as modern classics for 7 years now. Their tap room is open Monday through Thursday, 3 to 8, Friday and Saturday, noon to 8, and Sunday, noon to 6. More info at KlockowBrewing.com. And support for KAXE comes from the Third Coast Chamber Collective, presenting chamber music up north, featuring an internationally renowned accordion and violin ensemble from Poland at Kohaus on November 20th at 7 p.m. Tickets available at ThirdCoastChamberCollective.com.
The Cross Lake American Legion 500 is honoring all who served on this Veterans Day at 1:30, and everyone's invited to the Bemidji Senior Center's Veterans Day program at 1 p.m. today. The First City Singers will perform, and Quilts of Valor will be presented.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with a special edition of the Up North Report. 3 years ago, thousands gathered in Chisholm to see the wall that heals. The United Way of Northeastern Minnesota's United for Veterans Committee brought the traveling replica of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial to the area.
I think it was not only informative, it was very therapeutic.
Steve Potts has taught history for over 40 years. He's currently an instructor at Minnesota North College Hibbing and is on the committee. When the wall visited, many veterans shared their stories for the first time. That sparked the creation of Operation Service Story. The Oral History Project is a partnership between United Way and the St. Louis County Historical Society. The aim is to gather stories of veterans and service members from the Iron Range and Kuching and Lake of the Woods counties. When the effort first launched last year, it was called Operation Soldier Story. Soldier was changed to service to include all facets of service, including nurses and non-combat veterans. Potts has an extensive background in oral history, including interviewing Holocaust survivors. He's talked with three veterans for this project.
I wish we had more vets who are willing to be interviewed, but, you know, it's difficult for a lot of people to talk about what went on there.
His father served in World War II, and he could never get him to talk much about his service. Chad Boose had a similar experience with his grandfather.
I never knew about his experiences, where he went, or I didn't know very much, and now he's passed.
Boose is the United Way of Northeastern Minnesota's board chair. He served in the Air Force from 1999 to 2003 and was deployed with the 101st Airborne Division for the invasion of Iraq.
I want my kids to be able to learn about my story. It was one day when I'm not here to tell them or their kids, my grandkids, or et cetera, you know.
Boose talked for 2 hours with one of the trained interviewers, who was also a veteran.
At the end of that 2 hours, it was I had a new friend, a new brother in arms.
He says the conversation was a 50,000-foot view, but covered his whole experience in the service.
We talked about some of my motivation for going into the service. We talked a little bit about basic training, going through advanced training, my first duty assignment. And then different exercises.
They discussed his time wrestling with the All-Air Force team before 9/11 and parts of his deployment.
Getting into some details and some stuff we kept at a pretty high level.
Potts says veterans who participate in Operation Service Story get to decide the parameters, including what they talk about, how long they talk, and even who they talk to.
They can make it only available to family. They can make it so it's not available until they've passed away. They can donate it. They can record it and keep a copy for themselves. We do a full transcript, written transcript, type transcript of each of the interviews. You know, we're very accommodating, and that's kind of the best thing to do with oral history interviews. But it's a chance for people to record things before those memories are lost.
Boose's message to veterans who might be hesitant to share their story is that if you don't, it ends with you.
No one else can learn from it, can empathize from it, can hear about it. People in the military and veterans especially, you don't want to speak up, you don't want to stand up, you want to remain humble, but our men and women in the armed forces do some absolutely incredible things. And have incredible experiences, and it's worth sharing with other people. Let them know your story, I guess, is my pitch.
Service members from the Iron Range and Kuching and Lake of the Woods counties can visit unitednemn.org to sign up for Operation Service Story. There you can also find additional services from United Way, including a veterans resource guide and information on the annual veterans retreat. That's it for this special edition of the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is sponsored by Woodland Bank, with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River, dedicated to serving the financial needs of the community and their customers. More info at woodland.bank.
You can hear the Up North Report weekday mornings at this time and also afternoons at 5:30. We receive support from Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty, helping guide your real estate journey in northern Minnesota since 1947. buying or selling land or lakeshore, Coldwell Banker Northwoods.com.
We receive support from Paul Bunyan Communications, powered by the GigaZone, a broadband cooperative featuring all fiber optic GigaZone internet speeds up to 10 gigs and local customer service. Learn more at paulbunyan.net.
Coming up, we're going to be talking with Pam Perry.
Many is the time I've been mistaken, and many times confused. Yes, and I've often felt forsaken, and certainly misused. Oh, but I'm all right, I'm all right. I'm just weary to my bones. Still, you don't expect to be bright and bon vivant so far away from home. So far away from home. I don't know a soul who's not been battered. I don't have a friend who feels at ease. I don't know a dream that's not been shattered or driven to its knees. Oh, but it's all right, it's all right. For we've lived so well so long. Still, when I think of the road we're traveling on, I wonder what's gone wrong. I can't help it, I wonder what's gone wrong.
That is the late, great Alan Toussaint with his version of American Tune. It is 8:42, and you are tuned into People Powered KAXE. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer.
Support for KAXE comes from Timberlake Restaurant, offering fresh baked popovers, crafted cocktails, and menu items such as walleye a la Ritz or chicken Kiev. Information about the dinner menu is available at TimberlakeLodgeHotel.com. And support comes from the Loft Event Center in downtown Bemidji, providing a multi-purpose event space that accommodates groups of all sizes, up to 150 people, for wedding receptions, business meetings, concerts, and more. Info about the Loft Event Center rates and packages at BemidjiLodge.com.
It is time to talk cranes and tree frogs today with Pam Perry. She's a non-game wildlife biologist from the Brainerd Lakes area. Good morning, Pam. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Heidi, and good morning, John. It's good to be here.
Thank you for joining us. And reading that piece about chicken Kiev and walleye a la Ritz, I thought of you. I thought, well, cranes and frogs.
Oh, John.
Ew.
Well, let's eat.
Let's eat. I'm always ready. I wanted to start off by mentioning I saw a couple old friends in the last 2 weeks at gatherings in Brainerd. And one of the first things they said to me, I hear you on KXE.
Ah.
You know, you have a lot of listeners and followers down here in Crowing County.
We like to think it's because we have you on the air with us.
Well, I don't know. I think they are they have people who love the outdoors. It's like all your listeners. They love the outdoors. They want to hear about phenology. You have interesting guests of different kinds on. And so, you know, I think it's just all good. But yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about cranes because I love cranes. And I know you don't see as many in the forested areas, the Northeast, as we do in this area, which I consider more central Minnesota. But last Friday, a friend of mine called me and he said, Pam, he's from Crosby. He said, I went to Aiken. So then I decided to go, and he's a birder. So any trip out anywhere, you always go check something. And he went up County Road 1 north of Aiken. He said, there are 300 cranes in the field up there.
Oh, my word.
He said, they're staging. So that was Friday. And staging means they're gathering from small groups, family groups, into bigger groups. And then they're going to head south. And they will figure out, and they'll go in a big, you know, big flock heading out. And, of course, they gather at Crane Meadows, south of Little Falls, Crane Meadows National Wildlife Refuge, and then Sherburn National Wildlife Refuge further south is known for large numbers of cranes. So many people go and visit there just to see the cranes and see that many at a time. And then, so I was thinking about that, and that was Friday. And then we had cold weather over the weekend.
I noticed.
and a little snow. And I thought, I bet they left. And so where do they go? A lot of cranes winter in Florida, Texas, some in the other southern states where there's appropriate, suitable habitat, which is marshy, open, wet prairie, marshes with vegetation, you know, where they can find food and do that. And when I lived in Florida, and now this is when I was in graduate school down at the University of Florida in Gainesville, there was an area called Payne's Prairie, just south of Gainesville. And it was a wet prairie area. And it had a lot of wildlife. And the cranes came down there in huge numbers. And when they left in the spring, we knew it. You know, it was spring and Florida was going to get hot. But they were going to where it was going to be nice. And then they would nest up here. So I just think sandhill cranes are really cool. Everyone knows what they look like. They're grayish. They have some red on the top of their heads. They're 3 to 4 feet tall. They'll live 20 to 35 years.
Wow.
Long time. And they nest. I know where they nest around this area, just south of Brainerd, over to the east. I see cranes all summer long, spring, summer, into the fall. And then now I think they're gone. As John, you've been talking, stuff is leaving,
yeah.
Or stuff has left,
yep.
We can say.
Yeah, there's still a few robins around, and I've seen, I think, probably my last fox sparrow, my last American tree sparrow. Cranes have long since gone. I have cranes nesting near me, and I have seen them with their colts out on the fields.
And they're called colts,
yep.
The youngsters, yes.
And so I have that pleasure as well. Can you describe where it is that they nest?
The edges of shallow marshes. Sometimes it'll be shorelines of lakes, but, you know, it has to be pretty marshy, pretty shallow. I mean, they're not a deep water bird at all. And what do they eat? You know, they eat insects and frogs and all sorts of critters, whatever, and vegetation too, and seeds. You know, they have quite a varied diet, but yeah, they're gonna kind of make a mound, and they have that nest right on the edge, or maybe they'll have some shallow water around them, or right on the edge of the water. But those shallow, wet areas is what they really like, and it's unmistakable if you find a nest. You know, there'll be a crane sitting on it. So
we just got a text come in, says, saw a small flock of 13 cranes Sunday morning heading southeast. I was in my deer stand in the northern end of Pillsbury State Forest.
Oh yeah. Okay. Cass County. Yep.
And also,
yep. And, you know, this is the opportunity deer hunters have because they're sitting out there and they can watch not just for deer, but of course you watch for lots of other things and you can watch the sky.
Yeah.
We also heard from Karen this morning from Big Fork. She sent along a photo of the first pine grosbeaks at her feeder.
Hmm.
Oh.
It's been a while since I've had pine grosbeaks at my house.
It's been a while since I've had them at my house as well.
Yeah, maybe this is our year. I've had a number of reports of both pine and evening grosbeaks in the area, so crossing my fingers, I hope that they find
me. I heard that earlier this morning, and I'm going, oh, it'd be great to have evening grosbeaks. I haven't seen one here for a few years.
Yeah.
And the last time I did, it was like one or two, and they were female or juvenile plumage birds, you know, not the flocks that we used to have.
Yeah.
By any means.
I did have a flock a couple years ago that came and spent about a month, but they didn't, you know, it wasn't like the old days where I'd get a flock of 25 to 50 and they'd come to the feeder in the morning and they'd just stay all day. Yeah. It's like
the 80s and into the 90s.
Yeah.
We even here in Brainerd, we couldn't keep up with them. You know, we were buying sunflower seeds. We're going through 50 pounds a week.
Yeah. Yeah. Our only gift back then was that 50 pounds of sunflower seeds was about $5 or $6.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Instead of 20.
Much cheaper.
Yeah.
Oh, and I wanted to make a comment. You've mentioned bears a bunch this morning.
Yeah, man.
And, you know, for people who have backyard feeders, as I do, and I enjoy that a lot because it brings birds in and lets me see what's going on. I'm still bringing my feeders in at night.
Okay.
Yeah, and with the temperatures, I was listening to Tornado Bob, and yeah, we're going to be warmish the end of this week and into the weekend, and bears are still moving around. But one thing I do, and yesterday my nephew came up from Sauk Rapids, and he's a tall guy, and he helps me with things occasionally. And anyone who knows me knows I'm not tall. And he helped put up my winter suet feeder and then also a fly-through feeder. And a fly-through feeder has a roof, and the birds come in underneath that. And I always like having one of those up in the winter because it keeps the snow off the bird seed.
Right.
And all that. And then the suet feeder has got hardware cloth. And I put big chunks of suet in there. But you know what? I'm not putting anything out yet. The bears are still roaming around. And I do encourage people, change your feeders out from summer to winter. And I'm still bringing them in. Don't want bears coming in.
Yeah. I told the story of the one that woke up my wife taking the lid off the millet can and helping itself, or starting to, before she woke up and yelled at it. The dog and I slept right through it. We were just like, going to have to make more noise than that. Before we retire cranes entirely, I had a friend who I gave one of those phenology t-shirts with the American or the Great Egret on the front. Can you talk just a little bit? And we had a report of a blue heron in the area this past week. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about those three? I mean, the crane, the heron, and the egret?
Well, the egret and the heron are in the same family. They're like cousins. Egrets are white herons, basically.
Yeah.
And they're more associated with lake shores.
Mm-hmm.
They eat a lot of frogs, and most of them have left, but I've heard some late reports as well. A friend of mine in Cross Lake had one. And when she entered it on eBird, they said rare, and that's what they'll flag it. And it was rare because of the late date, not that it was rare to have
right,
a heron
right.
there. And she had sent me the photos, and I said, yeah, it's a heron. It's a blue heron. You know, and they nest in colonies up in the trees. Sandhill cranes nest on the ground, solitary, you know, just the pair.
Right.
You know, so very different birds, very different use of the habitat, I would say, and how they go. And when you see herons on your lake and walking along your lake shore, you know, they kind of defend a feeding territory, and then they go back to the nesting colony. Whereas cranes are on their territory with their nest, and they're just them on that area for mm-hmm. that whole time. And that's their feeding territory and their nesting territory.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Now we had
Can I talk about tree frogs?
I was just going to introduce the amphibian side of this. Yeah.
You know, I love frogs and I find them so interesting. And when I brought my house plants, I have plants that I put out on the decks for the summer, and then I bring them in and I check them over to some degree, depends how rushed I am. And this year I brought in three frogs with my houseplants.
Wow.
And I knew I had one in the house because last month when we were on air even, I heard the tree frog calling from my living room. And I couldn't find it. It was in the plants. And then so I was going, oh, gee, I don't want. One year, several years ago, I overwintered a tree frog. And I put out mealworms in a little cup, and I put it in my plants. And it stayed there. It ate mealworms all winter, and then I let it go in the spring.
Wow.
But if you find one when it's frozen out, you can't just put them outside because they're going to die.
Yeah.
They have to freeze slowly.
Yes.
And so what's interesting about tree frogs is that we have 14 species of frogs and toads in Minnesota. Four of them can freeze in the leaf litter over winter.
Please name.
And how do they do that? They eat a whole lot of food. It gets turned into what's called glycogen, and then it gets turned into sugar, and they pump that into their organs, and their organs kind of dehydrate, so there isn't a lot of water, and their extremities can freeze, but not the vital organs. I mean, it's so interesting that they can do that. And the ones that can do it are the two tree frogs, copes and the regular gray tree frog, the wood frog, and then the peeper.
What about
I'm
sorry, what about the chorus frog? Where does it spend the winter?
Water. Oh, the rest of them have to be in water.
Okay.
You know, that's...
I did not know that about the chorus frog.
They can't do the freezing thing.
Yeah, well...
And I find it, as a biologist, I find it just fascinating because mammals can't freeze.
Yeah.
Our tissues get damaged by the ice crystals.
Yep.
And then that's how we get frostbite.
Yep.
And almost everyone in northern Minnesota, especially when they were young, probably had some frostbite because they did something. But this is a fascinating thing. So anyways, I found three frogs in my plants. Two in my plants, and then I was putting some dahlia canna tubers. I think I was prepping them, and out popped another little frog out of the tubers. And so it had hopped into the tray while I was digging them up. And I'm going, oh my goodness, three frogs. And I was just glad to get them out of the house before we froze up.
Yeah.
Because I was going, they have to freeze slowly. If they freeze quickly, they die.
Yeah.
But if they can freeze slowly, their body adapts, and they're in the leaf litter, in the gardens. And that's why it's valuable to leave leaves. It's valuable to have vegetation on your ground. That's where these little frogs go. You know, the toads go underground. The frogs are in the water. You know, that's how it works. You have to have strategies in Minnesota to survive our winters.
Indeed, we do. My strategy is to get out and skate.
I know it is.
All right, Pam, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to talk to you. And believe it or not, I think one of the reasons that you run into so many listeners down in Brainerd who are aware of our programming is you. I think you bring a great deal of joy, happiness, and information to our airwaves. You are one of the scientists that we truly enjoy conversing with often.
Thanks. Well, thank you, John. And I'll be back next month. And I've already had people asking me about Christmas bird counts. Pam, which ones are you going to do? Can we go with you? What's this? And I'm going, I don't know what I'm doing yet. So, but next month. See you then.
All right. Look forward to it. Thanks, Pam.
Okay. Bye-bye.
That's Pam Perry joining us from the Brainerd Lakes area. And we're also getting some texts coming in from the Brainerd area and what they're seeing. I know Charlie Mitchell is going to love the frog talk again and how they do what they do. They're a little antifreeze kind of a special thing.
Yeah,
so
just amazing.
You may hear part of that on this week's Season Watch podcast. You can sign up for it, or you can just listen to it through our website, or on the weekends. You hear it Saturdays and Sundays.
Support for KAXE comes from Lady Sippers N.A. Bottle Shop, located in downtown Deer River, Itasca County's only N.A. bottle shop, offering ready-to-drink options, ingredients for craft cocktails,